Welcome back, everybody, to The Arrow. My name's Chandler.
My name's Tony.
This is the podcast where we talk about everything Avast Airbender, Legend of Korra, related till the end of the time, till the, well, time's ending in like four episodes or something like that.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
It's the end of the year and it's the end of the world, right? That's when the aliens finally show up, right?
What if tomorrow the aliens came and invaded our nation? Would they even be able? Okay, anyways. Yo, Tony, before we get started, we should tell everybody where they can follow us.
They can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Arrow Pod.
And why?
Because we said so.
That's good enough for me. Yes. That is good enough for me. Also, Tony wanted me to tell everybody that he said hi.
Yes, please.
Tony says hi.
Just to make sure.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Appreciate that.
Anyways, Tony, what episode are we talking about this week?
We are talking about, I forgot the number.
Eight.
But
I think,
there you
or
go.
Nine. Episode. Or is it eight? It's either
I forgot to write it down. Beyond the Wilds.
Beyond the Wilds. I'm gonna check really quick. Is it eight or nine? Netflix. Let's see what it is. What's your bet, Tony?
Nine.
Nine?
I just wanted to say
that's Netflix doing its thing. Okay. It was episode nine. It was episode nine. Yep. There it is. There we go. Yeah, so we're on episode nine, Beyond the Wilds. Very fun episode, very good episode. Let's just jump right into it.
All right. So we start this episode off with Ryu, which is one of the airbenders.
It's Lazy Boy.
Lazy Boy Ryu, basement dwelling Ryu, new haircut, new hairdo.
Yeah, it's got like little like blonde, some frosted tips in there.
So apparently he's been given the position to give a tour of the Spirit Wilds. He has his cue cards and everything, and this time around his parents decided to come down and take a tour.
His mom is so tourists. Proud of him.
Yeah, of course. I mean, she's seen him grow up in the fashion that like he was not really doing anything with his life, you know, a couple years ago. Yeah. And now he has a job. He's an airbender.
Right.
You know, he's trying his best. So she's definitely proud of him and what he's trying to accomplish. Very embarrassing at the same time.
Just a little bit.
Yeah, but as he's doing the tour, they get attacked by vines. So interestingly enough, they were creeping up on them and they were asking like, hey, is that supposed to happen? It's nothing on the cue cards about that. Then they all get wrapped up and taken away by these spirit vines.
Yeah, and so essentially, you know what? For some reason, I was like, wait, when were there terrorists? But my handwriting is just bad. I was like, that never happened. Yeah, so the vines attack them. And that's kind of all that we hear about it for a little bit, at least. We hear about it a little bit later as Jenora as Opal is kind of talking to Korra about how she feels like nobody really cares about how her family was taken and nobody wants to do anything about it. And yeah. Korra's kind of reassuring her. Jenora kind of comes back to Korra and says, like, yo, do you feel that, like, spiritual energy? Korra's like, nah, what are you talking about?
Yeah, it's just a spiritual shift. Like, you didn't feel that? It's like, nah.
No, and so they go they go over to the Spirit Wilds and they're not able to find Ryu and his tour guide group. And Korra's like, I mean, they probably just went to the mall. Like, it's him. Like, it's Ryu. Like, right?
Yeah.
But as Korra puts her hand on the vine to kind of get a vision as to what could possibly be going on, she gets a vision of, like, all of Kuvira's mechs kind of just deforesting the swamp and just kind of cutting down vines and branches and everything from the swamp. And Korra's like, okay, well, we know what's happening. Like, that's it. That's what we got. That's problem solved or mystery solved, at least.
Oh, yeah. Well, they still don't know why. Why they want the vines, why these things are important, but she understands that they're collecting them from the swamp. And from last episode, we saw that they that those vines have more spiritual energy than even the ones that were created in Republic City.
Yeah. And so what ends up happening too is that Korra is like, okay, we need to tell like Tenzin and President Raikou, and like we need to let them know what's going on. And walks in on like a war meeting between world leaders. It's like Fire Lord Izumi is there, and President Raikou and Tenzin, and even Prince Wu. I don't know if I realized that Prince Wu was back in Republic City. I did, because he was staying with Mako's family, so he was totally back in Republic City. Yeah, but even
I mean, he never really left.
Yeah, even Prince Wu, was to, you know, I think it was because they went to the outskirts of Republic City when he was getting kidnapped. That's what I was thinking. But so even Prince Wu was at the meeting, and Korra's like, wait, you invited him, but not me? Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, maybe just don't invite me, one, but like, you invite him? Right? Like,
yeah. And then, I mean, Tenzin comes up with her to her. It's like, well, maybe we brought you back into like action too soon. And I mean, that's definitely painful for Korra to hear, because I mean, she's trying her best to be in the role which she thinks she should be, which is the Avatar, and individual who's able to solve problems, and it doesn't really seem like she's been able to. She's had setbacks with Kuvira. And then now to understand that like everyone is starting to see her as not adequate or up to par of the expectations. So it definitely takes a hit on her ego to feel that like, okay, like it's not even just like one person or two people. It's like all these world leaders are like, no, it's not really, you're not capable of doing what you should be doing right now.
Yeah, and so even with that, Korra just kind of like it just takes a little bit of a hit to her pride there. One thing I wrote down, I think it was a little bit earlier, but even as Korra has gone through, and we're gonna see this kind of throughout the episode, right? Even as Korra has gone through all of these like really traumatic events, and as we knew Korra to be like the least spiritually connected Avatar and all of those things, right? Like being able to like touch the vines and like see what's going on all the way in the swamp, being able to later on in the episode at least attempt to meditate and just like get to the point where she was like actually meditating like so quickly, like I'm like, that's that's really interesting that, like, you know, obviously we'll see later on that first meditation was unsuccessful, right? But being able to kind of leave the like kind of here and now kind of thing, like that takes a lot of skill. It takes a lot of practice. And that, like, you know, I think that we harped on in seasons 1 and 2, like Korra sitting down to meditate and just getting nowhere, just like wondering why she wasn't meditating to the point where it's like, it's very second nature to her at this point. That was just something I really wanted to point out.
Oh, definitely. I mean, she's had like leaps and bounds in that realm, and the fact that she's still, I mean, yeah, that she's like considered to not be spiritual, like the most spiritual Avatar, but to have these abilities. I mean, the whole vine thing, I mean, we only saw that happen once with Aang, and then, like we mentioned, like he never uses it again. It's never really like a tool that he falls back on or even attempts to use, but Korra is constantly but she's used it at least 3 different times now, and it's something that's been helpful. And it's like that connection is, it's, you know, not the most powerful that we've seen, but it's just like it's something that's like in the realm of spiritual connection, and she's been able to tap
right
into
or
it.
even like going back to like Book 3 of The Last Airbender, right, where there's moments where Aang is trying to, he's trying to meditate, and he like, it's not an instantaneous thing for him, right? And I'm thinking like later on in the episode where Korra first tries to sit down to meditate, like she thought she had gotten there and it was an instantaneous thing, and she technically had meditated, but just not into the spirit world, right? But like, even yeah. Aang being trying to meditate, it, like there was like a startup process for him. I don't think we ever saw mm-hmm. him sit down and just meditate, except for there was that yeah. one moment where it was like this kind of forced, like, let me throw these crystals up above me and get to my cosmic power avatar shot yeah. out of the sky kind of thing, you know. But it was just something I wanted to point out. But yeah, a couple of other things that were really important in this scene, as Tenzin's kind of trying to say, like, Korra, we think we might have sprung you into action a little too early. Korra kind of takes that as like, oh, so you also don't believe in me anymore.
Yeah.
At the same time, just a little bit of a side note, which is planning against Kuvira's army, President Raikou wants to just like launch an attack on them. He wants to just like send mm-hmm. the full force of the United Republic military and wants everybody at that table to join him in like signing off on that strike. And the Fire Lord stands up and says like, yeah, no, like the Fire Nation has too much history at preemptively striking for no yeah. reason. And for that reason, I'm not gonna stand by and do that. And so then President Raikou like backs down and says, okay, well, we'll at least need to secure our borders. And then she says, with that, the Fire Nation will assist you, essentially. Like, I'll help you protect yourselves, right? But I'm not going to stoop back into hundreds of years past in our history of just attacking people unprovoked, right?
Yeah, but that's the thing. It's like unprovoked. But right before that, Bolin and Varric kind of charged in and were able to let them know, like, she has a huge, like, spirit weapon. And that's when Korra was able to mention, it's like, oh, and it does it, like, need vines to work mm-hmm. or something? It's like, yeah, how'd you know? And she mentions her vision. So they know she's preparing something grand. Mm-hmm. But still to assume that, like, oh, like, well, I mean, she still hasn't attacked us yet. Mm-hmm. So we shouldn't, you know, go on the offensive. But, you know, but with that knowledge of, like, hey, she's getting ready, though.
Yeah, no, I think that it's worth noting that she's preparing, but I think, I don't know. I'm not, like, a expert in, like, geopolitical whatever, but, you know, like, when you look at, like, a country that has, like, nukes, you don't just go nuke the mm-hmm. country, you know, because then that country's going to respond with nukes. You know what I mean? It's like...
Yeah, but it's also, like, constantly imprisoning people, taking land forcefully.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
You know, when all that stuff happens, especially if it's like right on your border, it's like,
right. Yeah, I think what they did was like a smart decision, right? Like, preparing people at the borders, like presenting like a strong front, like a. You're not just going to mm-hmm. be able to attack us and just get away with it. Like, it's not just going to, you know, I think that, especially like thinking about Kuvira, right? You know, you snuck into my camp and you tried to kidnap me. Now I'm going to like take your family prisoner and I'm going mm-hmm. to take over this city and you're all going to become my slaves. Like, you know, like it's kind of, she's very much like a, oh, you provoked me first, when really, like, she had always been the instigator, right?
Yeah, with her entire army right exactly. in front of you. It's like, you provoked right, me.
Exactly. So I think that, having Fire Lord Izumi there to say, like this preemptive strike won't go well for you, I think is, like, a smarter decision. I mean, we also have, like, the hindsight of, like, knowing how the series ends, right?
Yeah.
But I think that, like, as I'm watching this, as it goes on, like, that makes a lot of sense to me, at least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then after that meeting, Lin and Opal meet up, and Lin explains to her, like, hey, like, we weren't able to, like, sway their side, their decision to be able to, you know, go on the offensive. So it's pretty much just up to us to save our yeah. family. We can't put anybody else's lives at risk for our own.
Yeah, she says, we're going to have to do this on our own. We're going to have to... do a secret mission, just the two of us. So mm-hmm. Opal, you know, gets ready for that. This is where the storylines kind of split off into two different storylines. Bolin and Varric kind of mm-hmm. coming back sets off some plans in motion. One thing I want to mention really quick, just because it was so fast, Just so we can just get it out there. I think I want to go on the Korra storyline to the end and then follow the Bolin storyline after that. But one thing I want to mention really quick was the very short Varric Asami storyline, which was essentially President Raiko saying, like, Okuvira is planning these weapons and stuff like that, so I need my two brightest minds in Republic City to come up with a countermeasure. By the way, Varric, I don't like you. Like, and then...
He tried to kidnap
you. Allegedly. Everything you do is allegedly. Yeah. I mean, it's not like the biggest thing in the world, but it's like something that's worth mentioning because it does have ripple effects for the rest of the season. As well as just like, you know, we never think about Asami being super sore about what Varric did. It's never been brought up. And it was like, oh wow, she's not playing around.
No, she shouldn't. I mean, that's her livelihood. That's her brand, her name, her everything.
Yeah, she's like, you're gonna pay if you try anything again. You're gonna pay. You're gonna be sorry about it too. I liked it a lot. Just liked that scene a lot. It doesn't need a whole lot of explanation. It doesn't need a whole lot of breakdown, but it deserves to be acknowledged.
Yeah.
So shortly after that meeting kind of adjourns, Korra and Mako are, you know, standing outside of the Capitol building or whatever you want to call it, town hall, city hall, as Jinora had been in the spirit vines, just trying to figure out what was happening. And she actually ends up getting caught by the vines.
Yes. So she goes in there. She's not able to find the tour group. But she is wrapped up in the spirit vines, so she astral projects, presents herself to Korra and Mako and lets them know, like, hey, like, I'm being taken, I need your help. So they go to the spirit wilds, and, I mean, they get attacked themselves, but as they were avoiding the attacks, they end up in front of these, like, pod things, and they see that everybody's kind of just, like, encompassed in these pods. So, well, first she tries to spirit bend them out of it, but it doesn't seem to work. So Korra's like, oh, I think I need to enter the spirit world and be able to go like help them from that side.
Yeah, so she and Mako go over there. Well, so I had one small problem with this scene.
Yeah.
Jinora kind of projects her spirit to Korra and says, like, Korra, help me, I'm stuck in the vines. And then she disappears. And it was, like, right before the quote-unquote commercial break was. But, like, Korra and Mako just, like, look at each other for, like, 3 seconds, and then it cuts. And I'm like, that's like, a weird reaction. Like, I would have expected them to say, like, let's go and, like, start. But they just were like, interesting. Like, I don't know. It was just, like, a small moment. I was like, you're just not going to spring into action?
No, that's freaky. It's like, oh, my God, a ghost.
I mean... You know about this though. This is like a third. Yeah. This is the third season that this has shown up, right? Like.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know. Anyways, I just thought that was like kind of weird that they just like decided to just stand there. But as they go over and go over into the towards the vines, it's blocked off by the police. Sue says like, I'm not gonna let you go in there. No one's allowed to go in there. And Korra's like, I might be the only person who can save her. And then the vines like. Just like destroy the entire like scene, like almost knocking over a car, breaking down the gates and everything like that. And Sue just looks at her and is like,
yeah,
be careful. it wasn't meant to be a funny like moment, but it wasn't. I think it was. I don't know. It didn't feel like it was meant to be a funny moment, but I found it funny.
I thought it was supposed to be funny.
Yeah. But Korra, Mako go into the vines. They're like firebending at the vines, and I'm like, yo, you know, like maybe just dodge. Like, don't make them more mad.
I mean, you got to defend yourself. What are you talking about?
Don't make them more mad.
Just dodge.
No, but even Korra was like, when she like blocked them in, where I'm like, I don't think blocking yourselves in is actually really gonna save you there. But they found where. All of the other people had been held. They were in like the little it looks like an alien movie where like the aliens take over humans and they put them in little egg pods to clone them and stuff like that. That's what it looked like. Mako's about to cut it open, and Korra's like, "No, wait, there's a better way." And this is the moment that we alluded to earlier, where she sits down to try to meditate into the spirit world.
Yeah.
How did she know their spirits were trapped?
Because it's spirit vines. I mean, you just gotta assume that that they're trapped somehow.
I thought they were just being held in stasis, like Aang was.
Yeah. That and their spirits are within them, right?
Does that mean that Aang was Aang in the spirit world for 100 years?
Yes. No. Sometimes.
Like something had to have been happening there, right? Or was he just in stasis?
I think he was just in stasis. There's a lot of controversy around that, where it's just like, well, like Rava's spirit was protecting him, but it's like, no, she just activated the avatar state so that he can use the water bending technique to keep him in stasis. So I'm not.
Bending that kept him in stasis.
That's what some people say, and other people say it's like it's Rava that kept him like.
I feel like that would make more sense.
But yeah.
What if they never found him?
I don't know. It's Captain America didn't have Rava, and he made it.
Yeah, but Captain America had the super soldier serum, you know.
But everyone in this world is like super soldier. I think that we like taking rocks to the face.
We can just look at it. They are really though. I think we can just look at it as what's it called? Like cryogenic. Like you were just like cryogenically frozen. Like he didn't die. His body functions were slowed down to the point where they could keep him alive, but they weren't actually being used. If that makes it, his heart would beat once a year.
Yeah.
You know.
I think maybe a little bit more than that, but yeah.
He's cryogenically frozen. At that temperature, you only need once a year. He only had 100 heartbeats. What do you mean?
Oh no.
What do you mean? Don't you know, haven't you ever been like outside and then your hand gets like numb because it's really really cold? And then you go inside and you like wash your hands and you put the water on warm. And then as your hand gets warmer, you start to feel the blood rush into your hand. It's like a little tingly feeling, right?
Yeah. Yeah, but it might be a little bit more circulation to make sure it doesn't die.
Once a year, dude. Come on. Once a year. All right, dude's fallen. Dude's gotten hit in the face with rocks. Like one heartbeat a year.
I'll do some research.
Okay. Anyway, so Korra decides to try to meditate into the spirit world, and immediately notices that she's not in the spirit world, and is being attacked by Zaheer once again. And she tries to kind of endure it. She's telling herself, like, this is not real, I'm not here, but isn't really able to withstand it.
Yeah, and Zaheer's like, you can't fight me and the poison. And it's like, she's just put back into that traumatic situation of being attacked by Zaheer with the poison within her. And then she's and then she's being suffocated once again. So she's just replaying that scenario in her mind as she was meditating, which wasn't allowing her to enter the spirit world like she planned to. And when she comes to, she explains to Mako that that she thinks that Zaheer is blocking her from meditating into the spirit world, and that she wants to try, that the only thing she can think of is to face Zaheer in the physical world to be able to try to resolve this.
Yeah, and everybody thinks it's a bad idea, but she convinces Tenzin that she has to do it. And so they allow her to go to this secret prison on the outside of the mountains, this very like Lao Gai reminiscent prison under a mountain.
Secret prison.
Where she definitely meets up with Zaheer. He's back to having like full head of hair, full mustache, everything like that, beard, whatever, gray.
Yeah. The interesting thing right before that was that Cora get as she's about to enter, she explains that maybe if she sees the hero chained up, she will realize that he isn't a threat anymore. So before it went from, I think that Zaheer is blocking me from going into the spirit world. Mm-hmm. So like he was like actively doing something. And then it seems like it changed into the realization that like, wait, maybe if I just see him chained up, then I'll know he's not a threat. So it went from like, maybe it is just me who might be the problem or the issue.
Yeah, I never got the impression that she thought that he was actively doing something, and even though that language does kind of sound like that, but I think what she meant by that was like when she said like Zaheer is blocking me from getting into the spirit world. I always kind of felt like she was referring to like the memory of Zaheer, like the presence of him in her mind, like that ever present Zaheer.
Yeah.
Which I mean, I don't know if either one is necessarily true or false. I think that both of them make sense. That was just like my impression, was that it was it was never just about just Zaheer like has some sort of power over her from miles away or anything like that. But as she enters the room, Zaheer is just kind of floating above the ground in chains. And she says, she goes and is like, "I'm here to tell you I'm not afraid of you anymore." Looking very scared, and then Zaheer like flies at her, and then she looks even more scared.
So, yeah, I guess it didn't work. You still seem scared.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, this conversation, in my opinion, is probably one of the best ones in the entire series. At least from my perspective, I like it a lot. Zaheer realizes why Cora is there. I mean, he taunts her a little bit. And then he's like, "We're both not the same from that day, right? Like I unlocked the power to fly, and I'm bound here in chains, and all that kind of stuff." I don't remember what he said to Cora though.
Well, he explained to her as Cora was saying like, "Oh, this is a mistake," and she was attempting to leave. Zaheer's like, "I know why you're here. Like, you haven't been able to enter the spirit world." Mm-hmm. And she's like, she questions like how he knows this, but he's still able to meditate into the spirit world regardless of where he is. So he mentions that like, "Oh, there's a lot of word in the spirit world that the avatar hasn't been seen for quite a long time."
Yeah. Several years, I think he says.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like, and Cora was confused because she's like, how are you able to enter the spirit world? Like, this place isn't spiritually charged, or it doesn't have a rampant of like spiritual energy.
Right. He's like, "You're looking the wrong direction."
Yeah. So it's like, Republic City is overflowing with spiritual energy, but you can't tap into it.
Right.
And she mentions this, like, "I'm not the problem. Like, you're the problem. You poisoned me. You ruined me. People used to think I was unstoppable, but now they don't even think I'm capable of doing anything."
Right. And so in that moment, Zaheer is just kind of saying like, any reason why you can't get into the spirit world is your problem, and it's like your fault alone, essentially.
Yeah, and, blaming me is just a crutch to make you feel better.
Yeah,
but it's not helping you helping you recover.
Cora actually, and then Cora mentions Kuvira and how she's taking over the continent and how she's doing all of these terrible things. And Zaheer says like, "I've heard about her. I didn't know she's amassed too much power. She needs to be stopped." And Cora says like, "Yeah, well, I'm not going to be able to stop her if I can't go into the spirit world," essentially. And then Zaheer is like, "Well, let me lead you into the spirit world. We used to be enemies, but now our interests align. Yeah. This scene of Zaheer leading Cora into the spirit world is one of my favorites. And I'm going to go back to therapy speak real quick because me and Tony have been talking about trauma and trauma treatment, and we have a really great episode about trauma in general that you should go listen to, back like 4 or 5 episodes ago. But prolonged exposure, which is like one of the ways of treating trauma, and ways of treating phobias and things like that. It's like, this is like this graduated exposure to like the thing that traumatized you. And like, this is it. Like this, like Like, Cora has gone through all of the steps, has, mm-hmm. like, lightly has, like, gotten closer and closer and closer to the thing that has traumatized her. Like, it wasn't, like, it wasn't being hurt that traumatized her. But when she was mm-hmm. done, you know, being afraid of being hurt, it was the poison that traumatized yeah. her. But it wasn't really the poison that traumatized her. It's all of this was, like, leading up to Zaheer, the actual yes. person who traumatized yes. her. And now she's here face to face with this person.
Yeah. Even when he mentioned before that with her using him as a crutch and her kind of blaming him for everything that has happened. Even all that conversation was amazing to me, because it's really showing that, like, for her, it's not really taking responsibility of what's happening. It's really like, it's your fault and there's nothing I can do about it. I attempted yeah. to do something. But Zaheer really showing, like, hey, like, you're using me as a crutch. Like, you're running into problems or limitations, and you're automatically saying that it's my fault or that I have something to do with it, without Cora really understanding or trying to process what she's actually feeling of the experience she's going through, or these blocks that she has, to understand that, like, oh, these are my feelings as well, and there's something, some power that I still have over this.
Right.
Not necessarily just someone just blaming and being like, well, that's my existence, that's my life.
Yeah, like, and it's a thing, because Zaheer never said, I didn't do anything to you, right? Like, yeah. he knows what he did, right? Like,
yes, of course.
But it's not a matter of what he did or didn't do, necessarily. It's more of a matter of, like, yes, I did this to you, but you have the power to move past it, right?
Yes.
Like, I'm not the one holding you back at this point, mm-hmm. right? And so I like that Cora allows him to lead her into the spirit world, because he is able to talk her through and say, like, let it play out. Like, mm-hmm. you're going to make it there. And she actually does. And then he just kind of goes on his way. Also, that moment where she was like, my power has its limits. Like, no, I think your power is limitless. Like, that poison should have killed you. Mm-hmm. And yet here you are, right?
Yeah.
And she's finally able to go into the spirit world. As soon as she's there, like, Rava, like, glows throughout her body.
Yeah.
And she's able to talk to Rava and connect to Rava, and Rava helps her find and free Janora. Yeah.
I like that line when she was going into, when she felt like, she was getting the visions of her breath being taken away as mm-hmm. As Zaheer was leading her through. She says, I have no control.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the most terrifying thing for people, especially when they're trying to process their trauma with these experiences. Your physical body feels like you have no control over the sensations, over the panic, the
yeah.
anxiety that you feel in situations that you feel like shouldn't bring on those emotions or those physical aspects. So that lack of control is such a terrifying experience for so many people, that they had of a tendency of backing away and staying into what is safe, what is comfortable, but then not allowing themselves to live their life that they want.
Yeah, and even the idea is that, like, you, that's the point. Like, you don't have control,
yes,
right?
Yes.
the whole like Cora's journey wasn't a journey to regain control. It's actually what she says to Mako after she gets out of the prison, when Mako says, "Were you able to forgive Zaheer?" And mm-hmm. Cora says, "No, but I was able to accept what happened, and
yes.
that's what made me stronger."
Yes.
And that,
oh my god,
that like, I got chills when she said that.
Yeah,
I was like, oh my god, that's so good. If you've been through a traumatic event, like, no one is ever, I like, if you've been hurt by somebody, if you've been in a car accident, if you've been in a life-threatening situation, no mm-hmm. one's ever going to tell you to, like, get over it and be happy that that thing happened, right? That's
yeah.
if that's what you want to do, like, more power to you, but I don't think that most people will ever go in that direction. But
mm-hmm.
what the direction I think that most people can go in is to accept that this thing happened to you, to accept that you don't necessarily have control over the situation, and that something like that could happen again, but realizing that it's not your fault, and
yeah.
realizing that you can still move on and live and be who you are without having to be scared of it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where she got to. And that's why I love this episode so much, because that scene to me was so incredibly powerful.
Yeah.
Such a incredible, like, honestly, it's like, this was written by someone who'd been to therapy before.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yeah, it's that process that most people don't really don't see or don't even comprehend until they arrive there. Mm-hmm. It's that acceptance and not necessarily that forgetting or just passing over it. I mean, this whatever events or whatever experiences you might have gone through, yes, they're going to be a part of you for the rest of your life, but they don't necessarily have to be something that is controlling you or driving you in a certain direction. Once you reach that acceptance, which, like you mentioned, just like, ah, yes, like such a like a aha moment when I saw it, which is great.
Yeah. I also think I like the fact that I think that shows in this genre and stuff like that, like they have a way of leaning into the forgiveness of the villain who like did these like heinous things. And that's like, no, like you don't have to like Zaheer is like a maniac. Like you don't have to forgive him. You don't have to like side with him just because he helped you once doesn't make him a good person or anything like that. And Cora never ever has to go back to that prison ever again. She can, if she wants to, she'd be completely fine going back there, but she doesn't have to ever again. And I like that when Mako said, "Did you finally forgive Zaheer?" It was kind of like leaning into that, like, "Oh, this is what this kind of show normally would do." And Cora's like, "No, I didn't. Like, why would I? Like, that guy, he messed me up, dude. What?" Mm-hmm. So I like that. That's kind of the end of that storyline too. Janora is kind of reunited with Tenzin and says that Cora saved her, and Tenzin looks very proud. But we do have to go back and talk a little bit about the Bolin Opal stuff here.
Yeah, pretty quick.
Yeah, it's pretty quick. Opal's mad at Bolin. Bolin tries to get Opal back. Doesn't necessarily work.
Yeah, he just did it in the worst way possible, though. Come on, Link. When they first get reunited, like outside of like the meeting, when he comes back, it's like he just like lists like a laundry list of everything he did bad. And how he messed up, and I'm like, probably not the best way to approach that. Then he sends Pabu with a letter or a note to Opal saying that I believe he broke both his legs and he needed like help.
Yeah, come on, dude. What?
Come on.
No, you can't do that. You can't do that.
Like, well, she's going to be excited because I'm not injured, right? Like, come on. What did you expect? Had a whole picnic set up. Steam buns, but you know, Opal wasn't having it.
She's like, oh,
a sane person.
Oh, steam buns, my favorite. They're totally gonna make me forget about how you worked with Kuvira and got my family captured, and now there's no way of getting them back because we're so in love. I'm like, yo, Opal went like very like soon there, you know, like super. Yeah. I was like, whoa. They almost gave her like the sadistic smile too. It was like crazy.
And I like that. It's just like, sorry, Pablo, you had to see that.
Yeah. But later on, and then there's like one final scene with them, I believe, where Opal and I have Sue. Yeah. I interchange all three of those names all the time, and I apologize for it because I might have just said Sue earlier too.
I think
I might have. So y'all don't need to like flame me on Twitter and on the Instagram comments that I like said the wrong name 15 times. I know. But they're packing up on Opal's bison, just about to leave to go save their family. And Bolin walks up to her and he's like, "Opal, I know I can't apologize enough for what I've done, but I'm never going to stop trying because I love you." Right. Mm-hmm. And like that touches her, and she's like, you know, there is one thing you can do. You can come with me on this. You can come with me on our top secret mission to go save my family. We're gonna break into Kuvira's camp. And then Bolin gets like those eyes of determination. Like, I'll do it. I'll do anything. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the end.
That's the end. So, Tony, what are you gonna give this one?
A 14.
A 14.
Yeah.
I was going to give it like a 9.5.
Yeah, I think...
maybe like a 9.
Yeah, a 9. I'd give it a 9. Like we mentioned, that scene with Zahir's is absolutely amazing. Conversation, amazing experience. Like, it's something truly like therapeutic. With exposure therapy that someone would do in that scenario. So I think it was great.
I mean
the before and after.
Yeah. I think I want to actually. I think I do. I think that it hits so hard for me. I think that it's really hard to not give it a 10, not to mention that like the episode wasn't carried by that moment. Like, I think that the episode was a good episode regardless of that moment. Like, I think it was still a very solid episode, not maybe a 10, but I think that pushes it up there to me, for me at least, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I wanted something more from the beginning, from the earlier parts.
Got you.
I'm not sure what it was missing, so I think I'm going
to
stick with it.
You wanted Ryu to actually do something.
Yeah. Like, no!
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thanks everybody for listening. We'll be back again soon. Remember that my name is Chandler.
My name's Tony.
And we will catch you all next time.
Bye.